You made it. You're finally here. Welcome to Half Cocktails, a place where we have a great time celebrating science, the social contract, and just plain old congeniality. Dare I say a place where we seek a path to peace, prosperity, and exploration amongst the stars. What I'm talking about is an all-inclusive society, meaning if you're not on board with the understanding that we all agree to shared rules, norms, and respect, we're not obligated to even consider your opinion, because the social contract is that important to a civil society. I'm your friend and host, Dan the Worship and Dionysus Man, sipping on some science today, welcoming any new listeners here to have a good time. We're here to have a good time, too. Hope you're having a great day so far. Stay tuned until the end of the show. We're going to be talking about 13 simple tricks to turn your office into a brothel. And as always, I'm joined by some fascinating guests in the lounge today. Amber, my sister who loves woo-woo and thinks she's always right too. Amber, how are you doing today?
I am doing great. I am very curious about turning my workplace into a brothel.
It's easier than you think.
I don't doubt it.
We're also joined today by the professor, a brilliant mind and a snappy dresser. Professor, how are you doing today?
Doing great. Thank you.
Fantastic.
That's a great intro, Professor. I love it.
I'm sorry. It's like, I keep it simple. That's why they say my dressing is so snappy.
Yeah. I would say casually elegant.
We got
a really fun and informative show for you today, brought to you by the Blue Sun Corporation. Brighter than a firefly, smarter than a bug. Blue Sun. All right, we're going to take a quick look back at the Kent State University shootings on May 4th, 1970. We got some hot science news. Marijuana has been linked to DNA changes, and not in a good way. More data continuing the case for Planet 9 on the edge of the solar system.
Wow.
Which was a conspiracy theory when I was a teen, but now it's getting all too real. We're going to talk about some snake oil involving Tesla accounting practices.
Yes.
Looking a little shady these days. Going to play a rousing rendition of Fact Checking Time. And of course, we'll wrap things up with a feel-good story. We do encourage everyone to reach out to us at halfcocktails@gmail.com, or maybe you want to send us a textual message or even a voice message to 443-499-8253. You can also just drop some comments over on Instagram, Facebook, TikTok. I think we're about to get on Threads. I don't know. We'll see. But for right now, let's hop in the time machine.
Nothing would be better than a look at days of yester in our time machine.
Okay. University protests have apparently been a thing since we've had universities. In the United States, the first recorded was actually 1766, before we were even a country.
Yeah.
The College of William and Mary in Virginia. They had a protest against the British Stamp Act, which imposed taxes on paper goods in the American colonies. So the students boycotted their classes and staged demonstrations against the act. And well, you could say it's kind of an American tradition as old as America itself.
Oh yeah,
I mean, America was kind of founded as one big protest. So
back in the 60s, starting with JFK, we started getting involved in the Vietnam War.
Oh.
Not the most popular war, especially since time has proven the Gulf of Tonkin was a false flag. We actually have that data from the government themselves. Anyway, this isn't about Gulf of Tonkin. False flags getting us involved in Vietnam. This is the fact that we were involved in Vietnam. Kennedy got us involved. LBJ ramped it up. When Richard Nixon got elected in 1968, part of his election campaign promises was, "I will end the war in Vietnam," claiming, "I got a secret plan. I got a plan. A brilliant plan's going to do it, guys.
To win?
Just trust me."
Like, he was campaigning that he was going to end it by winning it?
As far as I know, just that he was going to end it.
Just
I don't know.
Going to end it.
Presumably through
winning. He didn't give a plan. He just said he had one.
I mean, that actually does sound pretty par for the course for a presidential campaign promise. I'm gonna end the war. And then we're like, oh yeah, a president can do that. Cool. Yeah. We know who declares war in the according to the Constitution. The the Congress president.
So he wasn't actually president when it happened, but he was president when it came to light. Something called the My Lai massacre. It was a war crime committed by the U.S. Army on March 16th, 1968, where they mass murdered a bunch of unarmed civilians in South Vietnam. Between 347 and 504 civilians were killed by U.S. soldiers in that My Lai massacre.
Wow.
I'm just saying there's too many parallels to what's going on today. Like, if you, like, here, obviously, we can say, wow, the U.S. Army massacring civilians is a war crime. Currently, armies are massacring civilians. We don't know, as they're being massacred, which one's a terrorist and which one's a civilian, but we know the civilians are in the mix. So,
goddamn
history likes to repeat and rhyme. Anyway.
Dan, what religion are the people being massacred? It matters.
Oh, shit. I forgot to ask that question.
Yeah.
Certainly not ours. Certainly not the correct religion, or their God would save them, right?
That is what they say, right?
The opposition to the war started really picking up when people found out about the My Lai massacre. And on April 29th, 1970, the U.S. and South Vietnamese forces invaded eastern Cambodia. And this was part of Nixon's plan, right? To win, right? He's going to go through Cambodia, another country. And they claimed it was an attempt to defeat the North Vietnamese and Viet Cong troops based in Cambodia. So this expanded the war and angered a lot of people, believing it only made things go worse. And also, we've violated a neutral nation's sovereignty by pushing our troops into there.
And they didn't like that? Go figure.
So all over the U.S., college campuses started erupting in protests in what Time magazine called a nationwide student strike. April 1970, Nixon told Congress he would end undergraduate student draft deferments by executive order if authorized by Congress to do so. This request was approved by the Senate Armed Services Committee on April 23rd. After the draft reforms, students could only postpone their service until the end of that semester.
Wow.
This is still law today, by the way.
Yeah, I'm not a huge fan of the draft, personally.
Especially how like we don't declare war democratically. Like it's through the Republic. Like, oh, no. The president said he wanted it, and then his party backed him, and they passed the resolution. So we're at war with the moon now.
I mean, it's only a matter of time, Dan.
Kent State is located in Ohio, Kent, Ohio, actually. They had been protesting for years. During the 1966 homecoming parade, protesters walked dressed in military paraphernalia and gas masks and such. In 1968, the Students for a Democratic Society and Black United Students staged a sit-in to protest against police recruitment on campus. They had 250 black students walk off campus in a successful amnesty bid for the protesters.
Wow.
So this student group had some power, right? The SDS.
Yeah.
And on April 1st, 1969, they tried to get into an administration building with their list of demands, where they clashed with police. And in response, the university revoked the Kent State SDS chapter charter. So the university disbanded them as a student group. And later that month, a disciplinary hearing involving two of the protesters resulted in another confrontation between supporters and opponents of SDS, where the cops got called in and 58 people were arrested.
Wow.
Four of the Students for Democratic Society leaders spent 6 months in prison over that incident.
Oh my. Good for him, though.
Oh, there's four different ones. Yeah, right. They were standing up for their student group. They went to prison for it. At April 10th, 1970, a guy named Jerry Rubin, who is a leader of the Youth International Party, known as the Yippies. This was a month before the shooting. In remarks reported locally, he said, "The first part of the Yippie program is to kill your parents. They are the first oppressors."
Wow.
2 weeks after that, Bill Arthrell, an SDS member and former student, distributed flyers to an event where he said he was going to napalm a dog.
That's awful.
The event turned out to be an anti-napalm event. Like, designed to get people like you who just said, oh, that's awful, to show up and be like, oh, no, we're not here to napalm a dog. We're here to talk about the horrors of napalm.
So it was like a bait and switch, so to speak.
More importantly, my point being, a lot of violent imagery was going around people's heads at the time.
Right.
Everybody's heads. Protesters, anti-protesters, cops, students, everybody.
Mm-hmm.
So April 30th, Nixon announces the Cambodian incursion. Troops are going into Cambodia. Friday, May 1st, there's a Kent State demonstration of about 500 students on the commons, center of campus that they use for traditional gathering and rallies and protests. The crowd dispersed to go to class by one, and they planned another rally for May 4th to continue the protest of this war expansion. A group of history students buried a copy of the Constitution to symbolize Nixon killing it. A sign was put on a tree asking, why is the ROTC building still standing? They had another Black United Students protest to demonstrate solidarity with anti-war protests that got about 400 students that also ended peacefully that day by about four. Later that day, Nixon went to the Pentagon, greeted by a group of Pentagon employees, with one female employee commenting in regards to Nixon's speech announcing the Cambodian invasion. I loved your speech. It made me proud to be an American, which prompted Nixon's controversial response. You see these bums, you know, blowing up the campuses. Listen, the boys that are on the college campuses today are the luckiest people in the world, going to the greatest universities. And here they are burning up the books, storming around this issue. You name it. Get rid of the war and there'll be another one. So Nixon basically just trolling the students.
Yeah.
That's funny. That's a very like self-aware wolves comment. Like, there'll be another one because war is a racket.
Right. Around midnight, people were leaving a bar and they began throwing beer bottles at police cars and breaking windows in the downtown storefronts. Somebody broke a bank window, set off an alarm. News spread quickly, so all the bars started closing. So you just literally, in response to the violence, they dump everybody out on the streets.
Right.
Which, surprise, they started to join in the vandalism. By the time the cops got there, a crowd of 120 people had lit a small bonfire in the street. And it was a mix of bikers, students, and homeless people.
Cool.
Wow.
And they started throwing beer bottles at the police and cussing at them. So that night, they called up the entire Kent police force, and as well as officers from the county and surrounding communities. The mayor declared a state of emergency, called the governor, and ordered all the bars to stay closed, and which made people even happier, right? Oh, wow, yeah. I can't go get a drink now. Police eventually used tear gas, successfully dispersed the crowd from downtown, forcing them to move several blocks back to the campus. So this protest started in the middle of the night by a bunch of drunk students and bikers and homeless people.
Wow.
Lasted and then got pushed to the campus. So Saturday morning, city officials, downtown businesses started getting threats. Rumors flying that radical revolutionaries, Antifa's here in Kent to destroy the city.
Oh, please.
People reported somebody told me they were going to burn down my business if I didn't display anti-war slogans. The police chief told the mayor, according to a reliable informant, the ROTC building, the local army recruiting station, and the post office had been targeted for destruction. Unconfirmed rumors of students with caches of arms, plots to spike the local water supply with LSD, and of students building tunnels to blow up the town's main store.
Oh, my.
Yeah.
Those students, they're out of control.
So the mayor met with city officials and the Ohio National Guard because of all these threats. They said, we're not going to be able to handle this. And so they called the governor and asked him to send the National Guard to Kent, Ohio, which he did right away. 5 p.m. Saturday. They didn't arrive until the evening, until around 10 p.m. It took them 5 hours. So either the Ohio National Guard is like crackerjack top notch readiness, or they were planning ahead.
Yeah, I suspect they were planning.
By the time they got there at 10, a large demonstration was happening at the campus, and the ROTC building was on fire when they got there.
I bet that whoever wrote that graffiti was feeling pretty stupid then.
Why is it this building on fire? It is. Oh, shit. Well, let me take this down. The arsonists never apprehended, and no one got injured. According to a later report of the President's Commission on Campus Unrest, information developed by an FBI investigation of the ROTC building fire indicates that, of those who participated actively, a significant portion weren't Kent State students. There's also evidence to suggest that the burning was planned beforehand. Railroad flares, a machete, and ice picks are not customarily carried to peaceful rallies.
No.
So that could easily be, in my opinion, like the Gulf of Tonkin, a black flag, like where they're like, yeah, they're having this protest, but you know what would really give us the right to just shut it down? Like, what if there were these posters? What if they made the posters themselves, the people who burnt the building who had nothing to do with the protest? They could easily have been government operatives. So fast forward to May 4th, like we've got, like, I don't want to talk the whole hour about Kent State, but so the buildup is pretty solid. Like, here we are in the midst of this, buildings on fire, campus protesting, National Guard trying to force their established order. The original protest had been pushed back. You remember, everybody went to class and said, we're going to get back together May the 4th. And at noon, as planned, university officials tried to ban that gathering. They handed out about 12,000 leaflets stating that the event was canceled. But despite that, 2,000 people still showed up. The protest began with the ringing of the campus's Iron Victory Bell, which historically had been used to signal victories in football games.
Mm.
And they used that to start the rally. And then the first protester began to speak. According to some estimates, some 200 to 300 protesters gathered around the bell, with 1,000 more gathered on a hill behind the first crowd. The crowd was largely made up of students at the university, a few non-students, maybe some dropouts and some high school kids. The crowd appeared leaderless, initially peaceful and relatively quiet. One person made a short speech. Some protesters carried flags, and then they were ordered to disperse. The National Guard got on a bullhorn and told everybody to get the fuck out. But it was really faint, and people in the crowd didn't respond. Some reports saying they couldn't even hear it. So campus patrolman Harold Rice, accompanied by three guardsmen, then approached the crowd in a National Guard Jeep, again using the bullhorn to order the students to disperse. Students responded by making obscene gestures at the Jeep, singing protest songs and chanting. So probably flipping them off. At some point, a few rocks got thrown at the National Guard Jeep as it drove by the crowd, with one rock striking the Jeep and a second one striking a guardsman, but causing no damage. The crowd completely ignoring all of their orders to disperse. At which point, grenadiers were ordered to fire tear gas from M79 grenade launchers, but the canisters fell short and managed only to make the protesters retreat somewhat from their previous positions. The tear gas was also made ineffective by the wind that day, and some protesters even lobbed the canisters back.
That is my absolute favorite move. I wish a journalist could get footage of me. I don't think that'll ever happen, but like being brave enough to go to the tear gas canister, throw it back at the cops. Oh my God. The best move. It's a great of image.
I agree. It's there's something very satisfying about the underdog using the oppressive tool for its salvation.
Absolutely. Question. So we have the right to peaceably protest. Yes. So how does that factor into this? Like, it sounds like all accounts they were being rather peaceful. So why was the decision made to break it up and cause chaos?
That's a decision at the heart of all of our protests today that get disbanded. Now they, in very Orwellian fashion, we have free speech zones where it's like, you have the right to protest as long as you're standing in this box while you do it.
And you can get a permit. You know, you can get a...
I'm not sure that was the intention behind that.
Yeah, you have to get a permit sometimes. You don't have a permit to protest? Sorry. Gotta disperse.
Yeah, I don't think that's what they intended when they wrote that.
So tear gas, they're just tossing the canisters back and the wind is blown away. So they start to chant pigs off campus, to which obviously the National Guard packed up and left and went, oh gosh, we shouldn't have even tried. No, that's not what happened. A group of 96 National Guard troops from A Company and Company C, 145th Infantry and Troop G, 107th Armored Cavalry were ordered to advance. The guardsmen had their weapons locked and loaded and affixed with bayonets. Most had M1 Garand rifles, which, by the way, will fucking hurt your shoulder if you ever fired one. Damn, not a fan. Some had 45 caliber handguns, a few carrying shotguns. I'm just saying the M1 Garand is a super destructive rifle. There is so much firepower in one of those. Like, that'll blow a head off. for sure.
Wow.
So, and one officer had his .22 Beretta handgun. Before advancing, they were instructed to fire only into the air and only for a single guardsman to do it. That's the instructions we're told that they were given. It is unknown whether the other two National Guard groups received any instructions about firing. Apologies. Company C was given those instructions. We don't know about A Company or the Troop G Armored Cavalry. So the armed troops start advancing towards the crowd, firing more tear gas. And at this point, protesters throwing rocks at them had no effect, and they started to retreat up and over the hill, heading out of the commons area. Once over the hill, the students in a loose group moved northeast along the front of Taylor Hall on campus, with some continuing towards the parking lot, and the guardsmen were pursuing them over the hill. And rather than going left like the protesters did, the army kept going straight towards an athletic practice field enclosed by a fence. And they hung out there for a few minutes without knowing how to get out of there, because they boxed themselves into a fence corner because the students knew the campus and the guardsmen didn't.
Oopsies.
So they were just kind of scratching their heads. And during this time, the bulk of the students assembled to the left in front of the guards, about 200 feet away on the veranda of Taylor Hall, with other students scattered between that hall and the parking lot. Some still standing in the parking lot or dispersing through the lot as they'd been previously told. While on the practice field, the guardsmen generally faced the parking lot about 100 yards away, and formed a loose huddle and appeared to be talking about what to do. They had cleared the protesters from the common area. Many students had left. Other students, however, retreated beyond the practice field fence and got rocks and started throwing them at the guardsmen in the field. We don't know how many rock throwers, maybe 10, maybe 50. The FBI assessment saying the rock throwing peaked at this point when tear gas was again fired at the crowds in multiple locations. So some guardsmen claimed to have been hit by rocks as they retreated up the hill away from the students. The crowd on top of the hill parted to allow the guardsmen to pass through as they're regrouping, getting the fuck off the athletic field. After reaching the crest of the Taylor Hall, the guard fired at the protesters following them. So they gave no verbal warning, and they just turned and opened fire. According to eyewitnesses, a sergeant named Myron Pryor turned and began firing at the crowd of students with his .45 caliber pistol. Several guardsmen nearest the students also turned and fired their rifles at the students. In all, at least 29 of the 77 guardsmen claimed to have fired their weapons using an estimated 67 rounds. The shooting was determined to have lasted 13 seconds, although John Kipner reported in the New York Times that it appeared to go on as a solid volley for perhaps a full minute or a little longer.
Wow.
And at one eyewitness account, suddenly they turned around, got on their knees as if they were ordered to. They did it all together, aimed. And personally, I was standing there saying, they're not going to shoot. They can't do that. If they're going to shoot, it's going to be a blank. So there's a long list of eyewitness accounts that you can go read. Later on, many guardsmen testified they fired because they were feared for their lives.
Mm-hmm.
How many times has this been a recurring theme?
Mm-hmm.
So wait, so the protesters' backs were towards them?
No. Okay. So they left the field and they were going back up over the hill, and the protesters came in behind and were a group were following them up the hill. They also had protesters in front of them, which parted to let them through. It was just protesters mingling everywhere because it had been a giant crowd.
But somehow this is like they're fearing for their lives.
Well, they're surrounded by all these college students with rocks.
I mean, I guess I can see it, but I think they need to take some responsibility for escalating it to that point.
I think it's pretty cowardly myself, and yes, they should take responsibility. So they claimed for all those reasons. They said, we were surrounded. The crowd pursuing us was almost on top of us. The protesters charged at us, and they were advancing in a threatening manner. The sky was black with stones, one of them said. One said a sniper fired at them.
The students had a sniper?
The students, you know what? We got our rock throwers, we got our students, we got our flags, and and Timmy, the sniper.
Oh, shit, Timmy Sniper's coming? Now it's a protest.
Now it's a protest.
Now we're talking.
So the adjutant general of the Ohio National Guard actually told reporters that a sniper fired on the guardsman. Absolutely. That happened. It's not just the quote of one guy. Like, that got passed on and spread to reporters. The students had a sniper. Yeah, 11 of the 76 guardsmen claimed they were under sniper fire. before they started shooting.
Wow.
A subsequent FBI investigation concluded that the guard was not under fire and that the guardsman fired the first shots. It's relevant today because we have so many protests currently being shut down at universities. And that's
right.
That's always alarm bells for me.
Anytime free speech is under attack and trying to be controlled, we should be concerned.
Yeah. It seems to be a theme, too, that people want to protest violence against people. And powers that be always want to suppress that with violence.
Right.
Violently.
With violence. Right.
Yeah. So while Kent State did help the outrage and shift of public opinion against the Vietnam War, here we are a few generations later, and we're like right back at it. Like people going like, well, maybe we shouldn't spend so much money on weapons and bombs that are killing people. Nobody's mad that terrorists are getting killed. People are upset that innocent people are getting killed along with terrorists. That's what's happening. And I hate how we've been carpentmentalized into like, you're either for Israel or you're against Israel. It's like, holy shit, that is, you cannot simplify this situation down to that either or. That's grossly oversimplification.
Absolutely.
Just my two cents. But anyway.
Just so happens. No, I'm not going to do that. I was going to do something military-industrial complex, something. Forever wars are really good for the economy.
They're so good. They're so good for the economy.
But no, we'll skip that one. As a nation, we really gravitate towards funding both sides of forever wars. It's good for business.
As somebody pointed out to me when I was playing cards the other day, he was like, how much does that Iranian drone cost? 11 grand? Yeah, and how much was all the missiles they fired to shoot them down? I was like, oh, fuck, millions. Millions each. I was like, you know what? There's a rocket missile company like Raytheon looking at that going, ka-ching, ka-ching, ka-ching. Hey, Iran, send 100 more of those $11,000 drones. I'll pay you double for them because every drone's a $4 million missile for my company.
Right, right, right. Yeah, I know. And then that's jobs, that's engineers, that's, technicians, even maintenance. People have to do general maintenance on the missiles. Those are jobs. Somewhere in the Pentagon, there is a room with a whiteboard. This isn't conspiratorial. I'm just making this shit up. But I suspect somewhere in the Pentagon, there's a room with a whiteboard where an analyst has figured out the cost of a human life. And it's just sort of written on there and circled. That's my speculation.
That's going to be next week's clickbait topic.
Or it's like, I mean, maybe there's like a scale next to like colors. And it's like, you know, brown, $57, white, like $242.
The Pentagon has calculated the price of a human life, and it's lower than you think.
Crypto fascists, $800.
So it should be no surprise that protests against war and violence are never met well in our current American culture. Because post-World War II, we've been in military-industrial complex. We had Eisenhower straight up call it out in his exit speech. It's there. Right. It didn't go away. But for now, we do, unfortunately, have to move on. This has been a great topic. Thank you, guys. It's been amazing. And before we do move along and start talking about some news, I'd like to talk about the amazing gift shop over at halfcocktails.com/shop. Have you ever opened up your closet only to find it empty time and time again? Nobody likes an empty closet. Have you ever walked outside and realized, I didn't have anything in my closet. Now I'm fucking naked outside. I could get arrested for not wearing clothes. Well, Halfcock scientists have released a game changer. I'm talking about branded t-shirts and hoodies over in the Halfcock laboratories. They didn't stop there. We got bucket hats, magnets, canvas wrapped wall art. And I know some people might not like the idea of magnetism, and they're called Luddites. You tell them to fuck off because you got your magnets over at halfcocktails.com/shop.
I'm on the fence about magnets.
Magnets? How do they work? I actually played that song for my wife because I was making that joke. I had forgotten how surprisingly uplifting that ICP song is. It's like, oh yeah, this is what? Yeah, Miracles, ICP. This is an uplifting tune. I forgot about that. Yeah, okay. Anyway, all right. It's let's talk about some news.
It's time for some news from our point of view. We'd even be glad if we could have a lap or two. It's time for some news. It's time for some news.
Sad news. Apparently marijuana fucks with our DNA. Not in a fun way.
I'm done procreating, so I'm good.
No, it's not procreation we're talking about. They took a study of over 1,000 adults and long-term marijuana users. They took blood samples on two occasions. They took the blood sample, and then they took one at 15 years and then one at 20 years. Okay, so this has been a long-term study. Oh, apologies. No, they just took them five years apart and then looked at.
I like that marijuana smoker's cough in the middle of the reading.
Oh, the irony.
Like a long-term study.
It should surprise no one that I'm a pot smoker. I've never been shy about it. But sadly, I'll be the first to report bad news about it. I'm not going to sugarcoat it and pretend like it's magic cure-all. This study showed what it's doing is something called DNA methylation.
And what is that?
To make an analogy, imagine your DNA is like the instructions for how to construct a cell, right? In a nutshell.
Right.
And, like if we were to think of the DNA as like a cookbook of recipes, DNA methylation is like opening up a page and sticking a post-it note over part of the recipe. So it's like, okay, I can make out most of what this recipe says. I'm not sure what step four is saying here. That's a little fuzzy. It's a little cloudy, which makes it more difficult to build healthy cells. It is not good. And these methylation changes, as you hinted at earlier, these can actually be passed on to future generations.
Mm. How long does it take for them to form to the point that they are causing you problems? I'm asking for a friend.
I don't know. They were researching people who had been, when they first took their blood, regularly smoking marijuana for 15 years. And then they took their blood 5 years later and were able to show the changes between the two.
So it took 5 years, or at least within that 5 year.
Based on this study, what you could scientifically say is people who have smoked marijuana for 15 years will have these negative effects ongoing.
Hmm.
So that's me right here talking to you right now.
I'm good till I'm about 67. That works for me.
So multiple epigenetic changes associated with marijuana have already previously been linked to things like hormone signaling, infections, neurological disorders, schizophrenia, bipolar, different substance use. They actually found one of the shared DNA methylations that go along with tobacco use.
Hmm.
Yeah. They in one of the markers they found. Yeah.
Interesting.
It's not looking good for long-term DNA health. Now, it's obviously this is America, so you get to pick your poison, right? Like, I don't know. I don't have any data on how worse other things are comparatively, right? You know, like, standing in a garage with fumes and smoke from cars is its own thing. Flight attendants get exposed radiation and get cancer easier. That's one thing. Like, it's hard to apples and oranges it.
Mm-hmm. Well, and it would be interesting to see if there were any other mechanisms that could have caused the same changes. Like, I assume when they did their study, they accounted for that.
Oh, a control group?
A good researcher would. Well, maybe not even necessarily a control group, but just knowing, you know, did the people engage in anything else that might have led to those changes? Am I making sense? I don't know.
Yeah. No, that's how it goes.
That's how science works, for sure.
But, like, I guess the question is probably, like, surrounding what were some of the steps taken, how big was the sample size, could there be something also all stoners are exposed to, like those,
yeah.
You know, those hoodies made out of hemp that have the Rastafarian flag on them, the glass of bongs, right. You know, the Wu-Tang Clan.
I do want to know, how big was the study? What did they replicate? Are the results able to be replicated?
1,000 people.
So that's a pretty small sample size compared to how many actually smoke. And out of that sample size, was it 100% of them had this reaction?
Also, I guess my question is more like, what is the, and we don't have to pick this study apart, but like, are they finding a correlation or do they, it like link to, tells us one thing that we can think about and process, but like caused by tells us a different
right.
process.
Right.
Okay. So, this study was published in Molecular Psychiatry, which is peer reviewed. So the research has already undergone rigorous review by experts in the field to ensure it has met high scientific standards for accuracy, methodology, and relevance before it got published. I know it's not fun to hear, but it's not just a day at the carnival. There are some downsides to ingesting marijuana.
There's downsides to breathing, but you know, just say. Not to be difficult, but you know, I am going to be
all right. All right, let's move on. This is a long episode. Planet Nine, which I always knew was just a conspiracy theory, but it keeps coming up because of indirect evidence. There's no direct evidence, but there's this thing called Planet Nine. I've been hearing about it since I was a teenager, where they say there's a planet on the far edge of our solar system, right? And I think it's the Cthulhu guy, Lovecraft, wrote about it and shit, right? Well, the thing is in astronomy, there continues to be more and more evidence that there's some sort of big Planet Nine out there. To the point now where this new study came out in the Astrophysical Journal Letters, and to quote the study co-author Michael Brown, a professor of planetary astronomy at the California Institute of Technology, I think it is very unlikely that Planet Nine does not exist. There are currently no other explanations for the effects that we see, nor for the myriad other Planet Nine-induced effects we see on the solar system. If there's not Planet Nine, we would have to come up with 5 to 6 separate explanations for all of these oddities in the outer solar system.
What are they finding out there?
So what they found was this team, starting in 2015, they found that something 20 times further out than Neptune is affecting the gravity of, what are they, TNOs, trans-Neptunian objects, okay? Yeah, so they're finding things like meteors, asteroids, stuff passing through the outer solar system into the solar system. When they model all the movements, they can't explain for how they seem to be pushed inward towards the sun. So they're tracking the long-term movements of these trans-Neptunian objects, things that go past Neptune in the outer solar system. And they model the different orbital scenarios based on those movements. They also add the data, obviously, like Neptune's gravity, even the tide on exerted by the Milky Way onto objects that are outside the solar system. They add all this math in there, and they find the most plausible explanation for the irregular movements they see in these objects flying through the area would be the existence of a large distant planet that we haven't discovered.
The gravity affecting the like wobble detection.
Yes. When we look at the real TNOs, we see them spread quite robustly inward from Neptune. Detailed computer simulations shows that the inward spread agrees precisely with the effects of the hypothesized Planet Nine and cannot be explained without Planet Nine.
You know, I love how much astronomy is, we're detecting a big, massive thing based on, you know, gravity of that we can detect of other things that we can see. But there's a big fat thing out there that is, we can't see because it doesn't seem to be emitting light. So, like, I don't know, in this case, a terrestrial Kuiper Belt object.
Right.
And it's kind of just sort of funny to me that we have these incredible gas because it's really, really far away and dark.
Right. Yeah, we don't have the data. James Webb, hopefully we can stick that on it. Apparently, they have previous research has eliminated 78% of the sky that Planet Nine might be hiding, with 22% yet to be examined. But I bet they get through the 22% and they still don't find it.
Mm-hmm.
Just a guess. We don't know. To quote Andrew Cotes, professor of physics at University College London, who had nothing to do with the study, "This is an interesting new study providing possible further evidence for Planet Nine based on the orbital dynamics of several long period objects orbiting the sun at large distances beyond Neptune. And so far, there is no direct evidence for Planet Nine. So further study is needed, possible with the survey telescopes such as the new Vera Rubin Observatory." So that's apparently all astronomy is getting bigger and better telescopes to get more data to find more things to go, wait, why does that work? What's happening here?
Well, we're talking to Voyager again. Maybe we can ask it.
Right? What the
there
fuck? They just go in and they're like, oh, this memory chip's bad. Well, we'll fix it with code. Like, wait, how do you, what?
Via radio signals. That's hot.
Yeah, it's badass. Badass stuff.
It is really cool.
All right, let's move on. Let's talk about some snake oil real quick.
Yes.
We should.
Oh, snake oil, on sale for me. Nothing but snake oil, and it ain't free.
Okay, so one of the co-founders of Facebook, guy, billionaire, multi-billionaire, named Dustin Moskovitz.
Oh, I know that guy.
Yeah? Oh, you've met him?
No, I remember John Ralphio playing him in the movie.
I love John Ralphio.
No, wait, it was Garfield. It was Andrew Garfield. Those guys have similar white guy faces to me.
I actually, I really like Andrew Garfield's acting.
I like them both.
Moskovitz, Philo Moskovitz, sorry, Dustin Moskovitz. He's comparing Tesla to the famous Enron electric company that went broke for bad bookkeeping. And he's calling out the full self-driving stuff that Tesla's doing. Tesla on their earnings call showed a graph to mark their key milestone of 1 billion miles driven using full self-driving. And wow. He compared it with a new graph released during Tesla's latest earnings call. And put them side by side. And according to Moskovitz, the automaker is doing something called they're recognizing deferred revenue as earned revenue. And now if you're not an accountant, like all the accountants went, ooh. Mm-hmm. So deferred revenue is revenue for a product that hasn't been delivered, like an annual subscription fee, like I just paid Disney in January, mm-hmm. right? Well, in December, they still haven't finished earning that revenue. They haven't finished it until the annual subscription is up. So that doesn't become earned revenue until the end of my annual subscription.
Are they subscribing to their car to keep it running?
They do have subscription features like Auto Park.
That's so stupid. Oh my God. Oh my God.
Yeah, you subscribe for that stuff. So Moskovitz is saying that they're presenting all their data in fraudulent ways to make the company look like it's making more money than it has. Mm-hmm. And that's exactly why someone would define their deferred revenue as earned revenue. They might want to look better at an earnings call. It's like, hey, we hit all these financial targets. Look at how much money we made. They might want to do it to inflate the stock price. They might want to be doing it to help them secure financing and investments from outside firms.
Yeah.
They might want to mask poor performance. Like, they want to hide how bad they're doing.
Look good.
It might even be an executive wants to hit his compensation package and can only do so with certain numbers. So, not that Musk's compensation package has been in the news at all lately. They might even do it to avoid going bad on a contract. Like, if they have a contract that says we're going to hit these goals, they might fudge the numbers, be like, see, we don't have to balloon pay this debt that you for this money you loaned us, because we hit our goals.
Right.
I honestly wouldn't doubt for a minute that Musk and his folks would do that kind of thing.
Oh, sure. Anything to maximize their profit. Make themselves look better.
In fact, recently, in a different article, I had seen something where Musk had spoken to the effect of people need to stop thinking of Tesla as a car company, more of a subscription services company. I was like,
Oh, wow. Okay.
No.
I'm sorry. I want to buy my car and then be done. I don't want to subscribe to my car, like pay every year to keep it going beyond what I already do. It just seems like a very poor business model.
I remember when people used to own things. Video games. Remember when you could just buy the game and it was ready? You put it in the system. You didn't have to download 40 gigabytes.
Yeah. Back in the good old days.
Sadly, due to a connection issue, it seems we've lost the professor, which is a real shame because we were about to rake him over the coals in a rousing rendition of Fact Checking Time.
Here we go, what do you know? It's Fact Checking Time. Will you believe or be deceived? It's Fact Checking Time. Cross my heart and hope to die. Stick a needle in my eye. Here's the quiz that all the kids call Fact Checking Time.
All right, everybody, welcome to Fact Checking Time, the news show quiz that tests your ability to tell the difference between a news story and something the media has actually deemed worthy of a true fact check. We're here in the lounge with my amazing, wonderful sister, Amber, playing twice in a row. Supposed to be the professor. I know. Yeah, you don't think his internet cut out because of Fact Checking Time, do you?
Oh, I absolutely do. I think he set it up that way. He like set a timer to make it. You know,
he knew what was on deck.
Absolutely.
Yeah. Okay. Yep. Today,
I'm on to him.
Amber, today you are playing for Poncho Cat, the co-host of the Half Cocktails News Shorts. And whether you win or lose will decide whether he gets wet or dry food for dinner.
I got you, Poncho. My buddy, we can do this.
I'm going to present to you a series of events and stories that were in the news this week, but only one of them was fact-checked by a media outlet. Could be an article, social media post, or an interview quote, but only some of them are fact checks. Are you ready to begin?
Yes.
Okay. Either. Boulder, Colorado has been infested with tulip-bearing fairies and elves. That's tulip-bearing, not tulip berries.
So tulip, T-U-L-I-P, flower.
Correct. Fairies and elves.
Okay.
Or.
Okay.
A Utah middle school has become overrun with furries.
Which one was fact checked? I'm pretty sure they fact-checked the furries.
Correct.
Yes.
Well done. Yes. Many different outlets.
You don't need to fact-check the furries. They fact-checked themselves.
Right. Pundits are claiming that a school in Utah is being terrorized with furry students who get to bully people who are non-furries, and it's all bullshit.
Interesting. Very interesting.
And in Boulder, Colorado, they actually have a tulip fairy and elf festival.
I'm going to have to look that up. That sounds right up my alley.
Pint-sized fairies and elves parading around the Pearl Street Mall, waking up the tulips. It's a springtime tradition there with live performances, special activities for kids, and more than 15,000 tulips adorning the world-renowned Pearl Street Mall.
Okay, I love tulips, so I have to look up and go to that. That sounds so fun.
It's a springtime activity, so you'll probably have to go next year. I don't know. Anyway, next question. Either almost 100 celebrities have worn see-through clothing to red carpet events this year.
Okay.
Or Sony once had to recall a camcorder because its night vision could see through clothes.
Oh, which one would be fact-checked? Because they definitely both happened. You know, I think they're going to fact-check the Sony Corporation's camcorder.
Yeah, not the fact that women, that you don't need the camcorder.
I'm not even sure that we need to fact check whether or not
100 celebrities have gone nearly nude on the red carpet.
Yeah, I think that's just a given in today's society.
You are correct. You are correct. Yeah. Woo-hoo! Yeah. And for the record, it was 1998. They didn't release a recall of any sort. But the rumor that their night vision did show you what was under the clothes was out there. And I remember it. And I remember
that is hilarious.
Getting my hands on one with some friends and playing around with it. And it was not correct. You could not see through anybody's clothes.
You mean it was just a rumor?
I know. We did hundreds of interviews with our classmates and none of them could be naked under their clothes.
You know, it's so hard sometimes to not be a conspiracy theorist because, like, I imagine that drove sales for Sony's camcorder. Like, there were people that bought it for that purpose. Like, so it does, you know, make me a little suspicious as to who started the rumor.
I didn't buy one, but as a 16-year-old in television production class in high school, I definitely, me and my friends got our hands on ones to see what the night vision could do. Not just for naked clothing, but that was in the list for sure.
I mean, top, probably.
And of course, yes, it is a real thing. Celebrities wearing sheer see-through clothing is just part of life now. You might as well be naked with a lot of these clothes. So you don't need it.
That's true.
Take that, Sony. All right. Last one, even though, Poncho, you already got your wet food.
You're welcome, Poncho. Let's see if I can go 3 for 3. It would be a first.
All right. Even though Poncho's already gotten his wet food, we'll give you this last one. Either.
Bragging rights.
Either a fitness coach has claimed on social media that salt can actually lower your blood pressure, or a man used pepper to blind people and steal their motorcycles, which got fact-checked. Pepper in the eyes and stealing motorcycles, or fitness guy saying salt will lower your blood pressure.
See, I want to say the first one because the other two were the second choice. Mm. But then my brain says to me, hey, your brother could be trying to trick you, and it could be the second one. Because he wants you to think it's the first one.
All right. But you got to refer to him by which story it is, because I don't remember which one I said first.
Let's say fact check the salt story.
Amber, are you sitting down?
I am sitting down.
3 for 3!
Do it one of these days.
Yes, you did it. I'm so proud. If you could hear the music playing, you would be in tears. We're all so excited here in the lounge. Well done.
All right.
Well done. Well done.
That's crazy. Throwing pepper. Like, that's a scene from a movie, people. Come on.
It happened in Nigeria, and they did arrest the guy. He didn't pull it off successfully.
Well, obviously, if he was arrested, it was not successful.
Yeah.
So I'm curious, does salt lower your blood pressure?
No.
Dang it.
No, it doesn't. No idea why he would even go there. All right, Amber, let's wrap up with some feel good news.
I like that idea.
A call for a sip.
A woman in Iowa has just won an award from a local nonprofit. They told her that they needed her to come in and talk about getting some grant money together, but it was a surprise party for Ruth Krieger, Do-Gooder of the Year in Iowa. And what she does is she puts together birthday boxes for foster kids whose birthdays otherwise get overlooked. And these aren't just boxes with some gifts and a gift card. In addition, it has everything for a birthday party, the cake mix, the frosting, tablecloth, decorations, all the essentials.
That's wonderful.
Yeah, she puts these together and makes sure everybody in her area that she's able to actually gets a birthday and they're not overlooked, even though they're either in the system or in a new foster family that might not remember their birthday. She makes sure that it gets remembered.
Oh, I love that. That's wonderful.
Yeah, yeah, good stuff. Ruth Krieger, Do-Gooder of the Year in Iowa. She's been doing this since 2010, and in 2017 is when she became this main coordinator for what they call the Project Birthday Joy program. Yeah. So thank you, Ruth. We need more people like you to remember.
Yes, Ruth. Way to go.
That we're all human. We all have the same little ego inside of us that has needs of recognition and care. All right. Oh, I think we did it. Sadly, we lost a professor somewhere on the way. He fell out of the bus.
Yeah, I thought I heard something, but...
That's what he gets for reading with the door open on a moving bus.
Yeah.
Before we go, I'd like to thank the Blue Sun Corporation, powered by Blue Sun, because even space pirates need coffee, tell you what.
That's right.
And Amber, we went too long. We don't have any time left for the 13 simple tricks to turn your office into a brothel.
It was my fault again, wasn't it? I just talked too much.
Yeah, if you'd ever shut up, I could hear myself think over here.
I know. I try hard,
Something tells me one of the tricks is charging money for sex. I'm not sure, though, because we don't have time to talk about it.
Yeah, might be onto something. I'll have to do some research.
I do need to give a shout out to Science, Congeniality, and The Social Contract, making society better than anarchy for many of the last thousands of years. Amber, any final thoughts, words, or goodbyes before we go?
Oh, goodness. Do I have any final thoughts? You know, I really don't have any final thoughts because my brain never stops, so I'm always thinking. But a final thought for the show, you know, folks just love each other. That's all that matters. Just love.
Just love. Just love, and they say our love can't pay the rent. Anyway, have a wonderful day, folks. You had a good time with us. You know what to do. Tell someone that needs us. You find us over at halfcocktails.com. Right. We're on TikTok while it's before it gets banned. YouTube, Instagram, Facebook. If you're in a giving mood, you can show your support over at Patreon or halfcocktails.com/shop. We'll have all those links in the episode description. Thanks for stopping by to go out and be well.
Be well.
Now things are ending. It's time to go. No more to get through. Thanks for listening. That's our show. Ain't affectation. We're just leaving you half-cocked. Half-cocked, half-cocked. We had a good time talking today. But even best times, eventually they fade away. Ain't adjuration, we're just leaving half.